Purim night. And I am following along with the Baal. Yeah. And I'm following along with the Baal Koreh in shul. So over the past few years, I always notice things in the Megillah when you're paying close attention with the person reading that I never noticed before. A word, a verb, a noun, that it's always strange to me. And then for a number of years ago, it would drive me crazy. I couldn't remember a half hour later what was that thing that I noticed before. So now, when I sit by the Megillah, I sit with a piece of paper next to me and a pen. And if something strikes me I didn't notice before, I make a quick note on the side, like where it was, and I forget about it, and I go back, and I pay attention to the Megillah, because every year, when you read the Megillah, there's so much there that strikes you didn't see before, you didn't pay attention to, either on a global level, a specific level. I'll give you an example. This is something that struck me a number of years ago that I never found a good answer to. In Megillas Esther, everybody is running. Everything is maher, everything is rats. Nobody ever gave me a good explanation as to why that's the case, but I noticed that when I was sitting on Purim night, following along with the Megillah. This particular idea we're going to discuss tonight, that is based highly on the text, so if you have a Megillah, that is very important. There are some other Megillahs over here, there's Chumashim over here as well. This idea was actually something that was pointed out to me by a Rebbe of mine in high school. One of my Rebbeim in high school in 10th grade was Rabbi Yitzhak Goodman, who was the Rav for many, many years in Israel, Far Rockaway. And he is a tremendous darshan and a very, very talented learner of texts of the Chumash, of Drash, of Pshat. And he noticed, he pointed something out to our class in 10th grade that always stuck with me, but I didn't get a chance really to pay attention to this Yesod in Megillas Esther until the other day, when I had the opportunity to go through it carefully and to bring out something that is fascinating. My hope is twofold, that perhaps together we'll have a deeper understanding of a main theme within the Megillah, and also you will notice this yourself this year when you are following along, and this theme that we're going to talk about tonight will jump out at you, and you'll notice things perhaps that I didn't notice in my own learning of the Megillah, and you deepen your understanding of the words of Mordechai and Esther. If we pay attention to the Megillah, we will see that the city of Shushan always appears in two different forms within the text. It is either referred to as Shushan or Shushan Habira. Shushan and Shushan Habira. Why? You know, in a normal book, we would say, it's simply the habit of the writer. It's the way that he write a book. Sometimes he'll write New York, sometimes write New York City, sometimes write Mexico, sometimes write Mexico City. It's just the way of giving variety in the way you explain the text that you're writing about. And this is simply how people speak. And in every case, it's referring to Shushan, the Malchus, the seat of the capital of Ahasuerus. But perhaps we can say something a little bit more deeper tonight regarding the difference between Shushan and Shushan Habira. Nowadays, the word Bira in modern Hebrew means a capital. That's what it means. Yushalayim Habira, the capital city. The center of the government is to be found in the Bira, in the capital of this locale. Rav Yosef Kara, in his Perush Megillas Esther, says that many Jews lived in Shushan Habira. Shushan and Shushan Habira are the same thing. There's no difference between the two. The Ralbag in Megillas Esther also sees no difference between the two. Shushan, Shushan Habira, just different expressions for the exact same place. The Rambam, in fact, in Hilchos Megillah, assumes that Shushan and Shushan Habira are the same because the way he interprets the halacha of what's considered a walled city, what's not considered a walled city from the days of Yoshua ben Nun. The Bahag assumes the same thing as well. And even the Acharonim, we find the expression of Shushan Habira used interchangeably with Shushan. They're actually, point out to you, two Lashonos of Shuvas. The Rav Eliezer Fleklis, who was the Talmud of the Noda Behuda, writes in his Shuvas Shuvah Me'ava, he talks about the city he lived, Ir HaGadola, Prague Habira, the great city I live in of Prague, the capital city of the Czech Republic. And the Shuvas Marasham refers to Ir Paris Habira, Paris, the capital of France. So Habira is a lashon of a capital. It's the place, the center of the seat of the government, and we're the most important part of town. However, if we look more carefully in Tanakh, we'll see that it's not usually how the word Bira is understood. And that's what I want to show you just before we begin, that Bira does not necessarily mean, or almost never means, a capital. That's not what it means. The Gemara in Beitza, you have the source in front of you, the Gemara in Beitza, and Daf Chaf Hei Amid Aleph says, Vitziparim shikananu betifichim uvebira. Apparently, there are certain types of birds that are mutzer to use on yantif without being set aside. They're not mukzer for yantif. What type of birds? Birds that are shikananu, that have their nest betifichim and in the bira. So apparently, birds of the capital city are not muksa anyantif. Is that what we're saying here? If a bira means a capital city, we're saying birds of Washington, D.C. are not muksa, but birds from, you know, Teaneck are muksa. Is that what we're saying over here? Birds from Albany are muksa, but birds from Rochester are not muksa. What's exactly the Gemara saying? So clearly it's not talking about a city. The Gemara in Bava Kamma speaks about a camel that was walking in the public domain, and on the back of the camel were huge pieces of flax that were growing from the ground, and the flax caught onto a flame that was in a public domain, and then the flax went on fire, and then the flax burned down the bira, burnt down the whole capital city. What type of camel was this? It must have been a very large camel with giant flax with a giant flame. So clearly bira means something else. Bira means a large building. It means a palace. It means a huge edifice. That means the birds that nest themselves in the building are not muksa, as opposed to other types of birds. And the flax with the fire burnt down the building, not the entire city. The Mishnah Bava Kamma says, look at the Mishnah Bava Kamma in Perek Vav. Modim chacham l'Rabbi Yehuda shemadah gesabira shu mishalom kol masha besocha shekein derech bnei adam laniach bebatim. If a person burns down the bira, you have to pay for all the items within. If the house burns down because of my negligence, you have to pay for the items in the house as well. You have to be responsible. That's what it means. The Yirmiyahu Nabi refers to Armonos Yerushalayim, and the Targum on Yirmiyahu says Biranis Yerushalayim. The buildings of Yerushalayim, Ibn Ezra and Sefer Ezra, refers to Bibiras as an Armon, as a palace as well. And therefore, the word Bira means a palace. It means a complex where people live. And perhaps Bira is only a building Lashon Chazal. That's not the case. Look here in Divra HaYamim. In Divra HaYamim Chelek Aleph, we find David HaMelech saying, Ulishlomo vini tein levav shalem. Shlomo, my son, give your heart, Lishmor mitzosecha, to keep my mitzvos, edosecha, the statutes, chukacha, the laws, velasos hakol, and to do all, velivnos habira asher hachanosi, and to build the structure, to build the Beis HaMikdash that I asked you to build. This is clearly a reference to the Beis HaMikdash. In Divra HaYamim, we find that Yehoshaphat, the king, built Bironios. He built buildings in Yehuda as well, according to Rashi. Bironios, u'migdalim, all over the place. So, the first yesod before we begin our study of Megillas Esther is that a bira means a building. It does not mean a city. So now we have to understand the difference between Shushan and Shushan Habira. Shushan Habira does not mean Shushan, the capital, but rather it means a building that is specific to the city of Shushan. Let's begin with the originator of this yesod, and that is the Ibn Ezra. You have the Ibn Ezra in front of you, Megillas Esther, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Beis, the second Pasuk. The Ibn Ezra says the following point, Kishushan Habira, Bishushan Habira, Shem Armon, says the Ibn Ezra, is the name of the palace. There's the White House, right, there's the Taj Mahal, all these impressive buildings have names. Shushan Habira is the name of the palace. Kamo, ki lo la'adam habira. The Pasuk of Divrei Hayamim, that this is the building. V'zeh armon haya besoch ilem hamedina. This palace of Achashosh was in the capital of the country. Ki chen kasu b'sefer Daniel. V'kasher timse b'megillah zos Shushan. Or ir ha-Shushan. Says Ibn Ezra, I want to give you a guide for the rest. We're only in Megillah chapter 1, verse 2. I want to give you a guide for the rest of the Megillah. And that is that there's when you see Shushan, or Ha'ir Shushan, Hushem Medina Karova Elilein. It is the name of a location close to this palace, Varov HaMedina Yisrael, Kasher Fresh. And as I will explain, many, many Jews, most Jews lived in the city of Shushan. But that's not the same as Shushan Habira. Within the city of Shushan, there's the palace, this edifice, this complex. We'll actually talk about more of this complex later on at the end that belonged to the king. And therefore, you have to understand Ha'ir Shushan and the palace itself. This understanding of Ibn Ezra can explain most questions about Shushan in the Megillah. So if you have your Megillah Esther in front of you, let's begin to turn some pages. Okay? Let's turn now to Perek Aleph, Pasuk Hey. Everyone's there? Aleph Hey? Yeah? Says here, the Pasuk says, Uvmelos Hayamim Ha'ila, Asa HaMelech, the completion of these days, the king made, L'chol Ha'am Nimsam B'Shushan Habira, he made a Suda for the people of Shushan Habira, L'migdol B'Arakatam, from great to small, Mishti Shivas Yamim B'Chatzar Ginas B'Shushan HaMelech. Where was this party that he made? For the entire city of Shushan, it fit in his garden. I don't care how big his garden was. I don't care. There's no possible way he fit the entire city of Shushan in his garden. Migadol v'ad katon. It's not feasible. Even if the courtyard was the biggest courtyard you've ever seen before, how could all the people of Shushan, the capital city, sit inside this place? Unless there was a miracle, like the days of the Beis HaMikdash, right? They would come from Yom Kippur, they're Om Sufin, Shtachavai L'Ravacha, they stood cramped together, they bowed down. I don't recall any Mishnais telling us of the miracle of Ahasuerus' palace where people bowed down and all of a sudden it grew. That's not what we're talking about here. So what does it mean? It must mean that Shushan Abira means the complex of the king. When it says that he made a party for the people of Shushan Abira, it means what? He made a party for the people who lived in the palace. It was a party for the people who lived in the complex of the king's palace. Flip a little bit further to Esther Beis Hay, 2:5. In Esther Beis Hay, we find the following well-known pasuk as well. Ish Yehudi haya b'Shushan Habira. There was a Jew who lived in Shushan Habira, Ushmo Mordechai ben Yair ben Shimi ben Kish, Ish Yemini. Right? We're all familiar with the pasuk. Look at what Ibn Ezra says on this pasuk. B'Shushan Habira. Ki b'shar hamelech haya kodem davar Esther, al kein hudar v'armon. Even before we had the events of Megillas Esther, the story of Esther unfolding, you should know where Mordechai lived. Do you know where Mordechai lived? Mordechai lived in the complex of the king. Mordechai was part of the royal government before the story of Esther occurred. And therefore, that's what it says, he lived in Shushan Habira, because that's an integral part. That Mordechai was already connected to the palace intrigue and to the government. He lived within the complex, lived on the grounds of the palace. That's why he would be in Shushan, the palace of the king. That's what he was doing. He was part of the royal staff. He was the only Jew who lived in the palace of the king. This also explains the Gemara in Megillah Daf Yud Beis. The Gemara in Megillah Daf Yud Beis says, at that time, by the party, la'asos kirson ish v'ish. At Ahasuerus' party, they did the will of every single person. What does that mean? Amar Rava la'asos kirson Mordechai v'Haman. That Mordechai and Haman were actually running the show at the party. They were both the stewards. They were both the party planners for Ahasuerus' event. And the Gemara goes on to explain how Haman had a different version of what the party should be like, and how Mordechai had a different version of what the party should be like. But why were Mordechai and Haman running the party? Why at this point in the Megillah, even before Esther comes onto the scene, is Mordechai the party planner for Ahasuerus' event? So Rashi says they were in charge of drinks at the party. We know from the Gemara Megillah that Mordechai served in the army of Ahasuerus, and we know, perhaps we're familiar with the famous Medrash, that Haman was sold as a slave to Ahasuerus, and he may had to write the shtar, the document of selling his slavery, on the shoe that Mordechai was wearing, and they both were armies. The story is, do we know the story? I'm seeing some blank stares. The Medrash says that Mordechai and Haman, prior to the events of the Megillah, were both armies were both generals in the army of Ahasuerus, and they were tasked with a mission from Ahasuerus. They both had two units under them, and they both went out, and Mordechai was very responsible, well-thought-out, planned general, and all the food was rationed properly, everyone was healthy, everyone had what they needed. Haman's army was not so put together, and they finished all their food, and they had no more food left. And essentially, Haman came to Mordechai and said, well, my army's going to die, we need your food. And Mordechai said, that's fine, but you have to sell yourself to me as an eved, as a slave. And that he wrote it on his shoe. That's part of the Yisod, the minhag of stamping with his shoe by Haman. All different types of things as well. But the point being here, Chazal keep on telling us that there was prior intrigue in the palace. Right? If you read the Megillah on its own, you come to the train and say, Mordechai is this weirdo who's hanging out by the palace, and Esther gets taken to a beauty pageant, and that's the whole thing. Where did Chazal get the idea? Where did Chazal find within the text in the Megillah that Mordechai is already connected to Ahasuerus? The answer is here, because he lives in Shushan Habir. He lives in the palace. That's telling us that he's already connected to the king and the events prior to what was going on. We also now understand that the Shar HaMelech is not a small gate. We have an illustrated Megillah over there, correct?
Yeah.
Right? We have an illustrated Megillah. So they have a picture of the Shar HaMelech, by any chance there? This is a very popular Purim drawing for Megillahs. Mordechai sitting by the Shar HaMelech. No Shar HaMelech there? Yes? No? So you'll find like a picture of the Shar HaMelech, and so good. So this is perfect. Here. We'll borrow this. Here, we'll take this, right? So, perfect, right? So, right, we have here Shar HaMelech, right? This is what is classically put together, we call Jewish arts for children, right? This is similar to that all the Bnei Israel in the desert had Shrigal and Peis, right? The same art as well. So we have here Shar HaMelech, right? We have a Shar HaMelech. This is not what Shar HaMelech meant. If Mordechai lives in Shar HaMelech, what does that mean? Shar HaMelech is a complex. It's just one building out of the entire complex that is Mordechai's, that is Ahasuerus' palace. Shar HaMelech is a major place. It's not just a gate. I think we probably imagined up until 8:17 on Monday, March 7th, that Mordechai was kind of like living on like a bench by the Shar HaMelech and like hanging out for fun. Shar HaMelech is a major complex that's part of the edifice of the palace of Ahasuerus as well, where he resided. The Ibn Ezra has two nuschavs. He has two versions of his parish. I want to read together, if you may, the Nusach Sheni of Ibn Ezra on Megillas Esther. He elaborates on this yesod just to give us a little bit more to work with as we go forward. He says, Habira, Armon HaMelech, Kamo, Kilola Adam Habira. The way that this is going to go side to side, not top to bottom. Kilola Adam Habira. Berabim Biraniyos, many plural of bir is Biraniyos, Zesh Shushan Habira Einenu, Ha'ir Shushan, Ki Shushan Habira, Hi Armon HaMelech. Shushan Habira is the palace of the king. Besocha Medina, inside the country, Shehimu Kefas Chom, is surrounded by walls. Bekacha Kosov, that's what it says, Vani B'Shushan Habira, Asher B'Elaim. I am in the palace of the king, which is in Elaim. V'Shushan Ha'ir, next column, Haisim Silos, there are paths, She'enan mukefas choma, that don't go around the wall, sevivos ilayim. The Shama Yehudim, Yehudim lived outside the palace complex in Shushan. V'lohayi b'shushan habira b'yamimeim Yehudim. No Jews lived in Shushan habira. Rak Mordechai levado. Only Mordechai was the only Jew allowed to live in Shushan habira, the palace. Bavur shivto b'shar hamelach, kodem shetil gachesra. We know this from the fact that he was living by Shar HaMelech before Esther was taken. Kasher Faresh, as I will explain, the Alkein Amar Akasov, Ha'ir Shushan Nevocha. That's why we'll say later on, Ha'ir Shushan Nevocha, because that's where the Jews were living outside of the palace. The city of Shushan was Nevocha. They were upset over the Gzera. Back over to the right side, Ki Rov Ha'ir HaYehuda, most of the city of Shushan was Jews. V'chein Ha'ir Shushan Tzal V'Sameich, the city of Shushan will rejoice. Ki Ma Gedula Ha'isal Yudim Ad Shidag Ha'admon HaMelech B'Maltan O Yismach B'Shuasam. They'll rejoice at that time as well. Kacha Kasov Yudim Asher B'Shushan V'Kulu Yudim Asher B'Shushan. So therefore he says, you have to be careful when reading the Pesukim, are we talking about Shushan or Shushan Abir? And that in fact will enlighten your understanding of the Megillah. Let's go back to the beginning of the Megillah. Perek Aleph Pasuk Beis. Okay? Perek Aleph Pasuk Beis. It begins by noting something about the throne. B'yamim ahem, k'sheves ha-melech achashverosh, al kisei malchus. So he sat on his throne, asher b'shushan habira. The throne is in the palace. There is another mahalach here. The Vilna Gaon has a long mahalach here about how the throne was very complex. It was so big. It was designed in Shushan. It was really supposed to go to the capital, which was another city, probably Nineveh. But it was so big and so complex, they couldn't move it. So Ahasuerus was such a Baal Gaiva, he had to move his entire government to Shushan because he was so obsessed with his throne, and he turned the whole country upside down. That's because they want to understand that Shushan and Shushan Abira are the same thing. But if you're going to say Shushan Abira means the palace, it makes sense. He sat on his throne within the palace. In Beis Gimel, Perek Beis, Pasuk Gimel, in the events of the beauty pageant, so to speak, of Ahasuerus, the women are gathered in the palace. It says as follows: V'yifaked Hamelech Pikidim, b'chol midinos malchus. So we had people in charge in all the parts of the countries. V'yikabsu is called Na'ara Besul Tovas Maral Shushan Habira, and he gathered all of the young women to Shushan Habira, to the palace. El Beis HaNashim. Within Shushan Habir, within the palace, there was a complex called Beis HaNashim. Al Yad HaGeisaris HaMelech Shom HaNashim V'Nasun Tamrukayan, and then all the events unfolded there. That's specific. They weren't hanging out on the streets of Shushan. It wasn't Las Vegas. It was a complex specifically where they were put. In Gimel Tesvav, turn to the next parak, chapter 3, verse 15, when speaking about the Gezerah of Haman, it says, HaRatzim Yatsu Duchufim. They sent out the messengers, Bidvar HaMelech, with the word of the king, Vahadas Nitna, and the proclamation was placed where? B'shushan Habira. V'hamelech v'haman yashu l'shtos, the king and Haman sat to drink, v'er Shushan Nevocha. But the city of Shushan was distraught. The city of Shushan, full of Jews, was distraught. But Shushan HaBira, that had no Jews in it, was fine. That's why it says specifically. The proclamation was written where? Obviously in the king's palace. That's the proclamation was made. But at the end of the day, the city that was affected by it was the city of Shushan. Look here in the Ibn Ezra. Shushan. Shushan, where the Jews relied. Navocha. Why would the Megillah have to say that Shushan HaBira was upset? There was no Jews who lived there besides Mordechai. There were no Jews there in Shushan HaBira in the palace, only Mordechai. Yeah.
Esther was Mordechai?
When?
Like, was she brought up by
Mordechai?
Was
yeah.
Living in his house?
Out there, yeah. But that's two out of the entire complex. Meaning, there was only one, meaning Esther and Mordechai.
But she was really brought up in Shushan HaBira then.
I guess technically, at some point, correct. Sure, yeah, could be, yeah. I'm not arguing, correct, 100%. I guess we could sit at what point did he reach that position, and that point, but certainly when they were together, at the moment of the events unfurling, they were certainly in Shushan HaBira. In Esther Gimel Ches, go back to Gimel Ches, in 3:8, it says, V'yas pas shegen ksav hadas, and the writing of the proclamation, Asher Nitan B'Shushan Lashmidam, that was then sent out to Shushan to destroy them, Nasan Lo Laharoses Esther, was shown to Esther, Lahagidla, to tell her, L'tzavos Aleha, Lavo El Melech Yischatein L'Levakash Lofen Avalama. He now wants to go to Esther and tell her, hey, what's going on? You have to go do something about it. The proclamation was ordered in Shushan HaBira, but the actual signed document advertising the destruction of the Jews was not in Shushan HaBira. They didn't need to put up Pashkevel, and, you know, like signs on the walls telling us about the destruction of the Jews in Shushan HaBira, because it wasn't relevant, because the Jews lived in Shushan, not in the capital complex. And therefore, that's why it says that the Ksav Hadas was put in Shushan. It was signed in Shushan HaBira, but it was put up in the city of Shushan. Later, in Perek Dalet, in Pasuk Tazayin, flip a page or two, we find the famous conversation between Esther and Mordechai as they go to plan what to do to save the Jews. Leich kenos is called Yehudim hanimtzayim b'Shushan. Go and gather all the Jews who live in Shushan. V'sumo alai v'al tachlu v'al tishtu shloshes yomim. Fast, don't eat for 3 days. Laila v'yom gamanina rosi. I will also and my maidservants will fast at some kain. V'v'chein avol amelach will come to the king asher lo chadas against the law v'cheshavari vadi. What will be? Obviously, there'd be no need to gather Jews in Shushan HaBira. That's why it says, gather all the Jews in Shushan, not Shushan HaBira, because there were no Jews in Shushan HaBira at that time, besides for Mordechai. And then, look at the next pasuk. The pasuk then says, V'yavor Mordechai, V'yask echol ashut sivsa alav Esther. And then he went, and he passed over, and he did everything Esther asked. V'yavor, he passed over. He was avar. Where did he pass over? What does that mean? He passed over. Passed over what? So look at the Gemara and Megillah. Look at how technically Chazal read a pasuk. You read a Gemara sometimes. You read a Medrash. Like, where did they get this from? Where did they make this up from? So the Gemara and Megillah says, "Avar arkuma demaya." He crossed over a stream of water. That's what it means. Vayavar Mordechai. He crossed over the bridge over a stream of water, and he went to do whatever Esther told him to do. Why is he crossing over a bridge of water? Come on, look in the Ibn Ezra. Vayavor, Avor Mordechai al-Yudim, Asher b'Shushan. He had to pass over to the Jews in Shushan. Yesh nahar ben Shushan HaBira l'Shushan HaYir. There's a moat. There's a river around the capital complex. So he has to pass over a bridge of water in order to get there, in order to tell them exactly what's going to happen. It's obvious according to Ibn Ezra. That's where Chazal got it from, because there's a difference between Shushan and Shushan HaBira. This approach of Ibn Ezra that we've spent certainly some time on, he's not alone. The Al-Shech HaKadosh also adopts this approach in his Perashat Megillas Esther, as does Rav Yonasan Eibeshitz. Yonasan Eibeshitz is, him and Megillas Esther are made for each other. Rav Yonasan Eibeshitz has beautiful ideas, beautiful drash in the Yaros Tavash, his Perish Yeshua Gedola, beautiful, beautiful stuff based on these Yesodos, but all lock in step with Ibn Ezra's approach to Shushan versus Shushan HaBira. There is one question on this. I'm going to ask Akasha and hopefully have an answer. It seems from the Megillah that Mordechai is in the streets of the city when Esther tells him to go gather the Jews, right? He's hanging out. We have this picture, right? Mordechai is like sitting outside the palace, like waiting for Esther to communicate things back to him. And it says that Hasach, who was Esther's servant, goes out to Rehov HaIr to speak with Mordechai, and he returned with the message of Lech Knosis Kol Yehudim. If Mordechai is in the streets, already in the city of Shushan, then why do he need to cross over a bridge? So if he's moving from Shushan to Shushan Abira, it could be that Rehov HaIr does not mean the city of Shushan. Rehov HaIr means the streets that are around the palace complex. That was one way to get out of the issue, but that's just a technicality. This entire Yesod Ibn Ezra continues in other places as well. Let's go to the second Gzeira of Achashverosh. At the end of the story, when the Jews are now defending themselves, permission is given to the Jews to attack their enemies, and it was proclaimed in a specific place. Go to Esther Ches Yodalad, 8:14. Okay? You go to Esther Ches Yodalad, 8:14. Look at what it says about the proclamation of the Jews to defend themselves. Haratzim rochvei harechesh ha'achashtaranim, the messengers of the king, yatsu muvhalim aduchim, they went out quickly, bidvar hamelech, with the word of the king, vadas nitzna, and the proclamation was placed, b'shushan habira. For the second proclamation, that the Jews are allowed to protect themselves, it's placed in Shushan habira. Okay, everyone sees that? Go to Pasuk Tesvav. In Ches Tesvav, when Mordechai went out wearing the clothes of the king in that final great sign of success and the Jews being on top, so in front of everybody it says, U'Mordechai yatzav lefnei hamelech bilavush malchus chelus v'chor v'ateres zav gedola v'tachrich butzver gamen, all the royal garments v'yarshushan tzalav v'samecha. Right? So in the first pasuk there, the proclamation came from the palace. That makes sense, right? Where did the proclamation come from that the Jews are allowed to defend themselves? That came from the palace of the king. So it says Shushan Abira. When he goes out to the city, he goes out El Yer Shushan, to the Jewish quarter of the city of Shushan. But there's no particular reason why Shushan Habira should have rejoiced. So that's why it says Shushan. If you go to Tes Vav, go to chapter 9, verse 6, Tes Vav, it says that Chamesh Meos Ish, the famous hanging of the sons of Haman, 500 men, uveshushan habira, hargu yudim va'abed, were killed in Shushan habira, including the tents of Haman. Then we read the tents of Haman very quickly, right, in one breath. Why is there so much bloodshed in Shushan habira, right? I would expect that the 500 men and the tents of Haman is occurring where? In Shushan, not Shushan habira. So how would we explain that? The answer must be that after Haman comes to power, and he's in his position, what happens when somebody comes to power? Who do they hire to work in their office space? All their friends, family, right? Everybody comes to tag along, right? And they all were given friends and family discounts in the government's ministries. And that's what it was all filled with. All of Achashverosh's palace at that point was filled with the people of Haman. And therefore, there were probably many, many, many anti-Semites working in Achashverosh's palace at that point. And therefore, that's why the bloodshed occurred in the complex of the king. Because it was all filled with Haman's people in Shushan Habira. And that's why so many people are being killed. That's the message. Look how many people in the high government of Achashverosh, because of Haman, were involved in this government situation. And they all were going to be killed by the Jews in their defense. After this, in Perek Tes, Yud Aleph Yud Beis, Achashverosh shares the news with Esther. Okay, and he says, "Bayomahu ba mispar harugim b'shushan habira lefnei hamelech." They counted up the people who were killed. And they brought it before the king. "Vayomer hamelech Esther amalka," and the king said to Queen Esther, "B'shushan habira hargu yehudim, in the city of Shusha, in the Shushan habira, they killed Yehudim, Abed, Chamesh, Meos, each 500 people, Vesaseres, Ben Haman, the 10 sons of Haman, Bishar, Medinas, Hamelech, Ma'asu." So what else can I do for you, says? You got what you wanted, right? All the bad people were killed. Ma'asu, Umashil, Aseich, Nisan, Lach, whatever you want, Umabek, Bakash, Aseich, Od, Betes, whatever you want, I'll do. So what does Esther tell Achashverosh? But Tomer Esther, Im al Hamelech Tov, Yinosen Gam Machal, Yehudim, Asher, Beshushan, Lasus, Kadas, Hayom, Vesaseres, Ben Haman, Yitzalites. Now, in the city of Shushan, the next day, let us do what we want. Because when were the people in Shushan Habira killed? When were Haman's compatriots and fellow anti-Semites killed? That was on the 14th. in Shushan Habira. Only the next day, in the place where the Jews lived, in the city of Shushan, would there be the Shushan Purim. So it says in the next pasuk in Tes Vav, Vayikalu Yehudim Asher b'Shushan. So the next day, the people of Shushan, Gam b'Yom Arba Asar Chodesh Adar, Yargu b'Shushan, Shalosh Me'oshish, Uviviza Lo Shalchu Es Yadam. Now, if Shushan and Shushan Abir are the same thing, then we have to say that the people of Shushan couldn't finish the job in one day, so they needed Esther to ask for another day. That's why they needed 2 days. But that's not what we're saying here. According to our way of reading, the Megillah is very exact in what happened. Let's put it together. The first thing the Jews did was to eliminate the group associated with Haman, the concentrated aristocrats in Shushan Habira. They wiped them out so they wouldn't be a problem. That happened on the first day. That's why in Tes Dalid, it says, Vayomer HaMelech La'asos Kein V'tinas En Das B'Shushan. Before this, the proclamation was in Shushan Habira. Originally, the people in the king's complex had to be taken care of. Why are they now being made in Shushan? Because the previous proclamations were related to the Malchus of Achashverosh. Achashverosh was saying, there's people in my government, we got to clean house, we got to flush out, we have to drain the swamp, as was once an expression. We got to get rid of all the bad people in the government, we have to take care of them in Shushan Habira on the first day. And then, afterwards, it was sent out to other places of the kingdom. But this was a unique proclamation only for the Jews of the city of Shushan. And therefore, the Megillah focuses not on the place it was written, but on the place it would impact. V'tinasa en das b'Shushan. This is going to impact those places outside in Shushan. This is really all the sukkim that I darshan so far on this Ibn Ezra and this Yisod. Perhaps there are more. This is, I think it lightens up a lot of places in the Megillah. And hopefully, as we're going through the Megillah in 2 weeks from now, we'll have a better appreciation for the particulars of the Pesukim and what the Megillah is telling us. Something to be sensitive to as well. But I also want to use this to explain a couple of more points, not related to the Megillah itself. There's a Mishnah Maseches Midos. Maseches Midos is about the construction of the Beis HaMikdash, the second Beis HaMikdash, and what it looked like. So let's read this Mishnah together. Chamisha Sha'arim Hayu Laharabayis. On the entrance to the Temple Mount, not to the Beis HaMikdash itself, but to the Temple Mount, there are 5 gates. Shnei Sha'arei Chulda Min Hadarom. There are 2 gates of Chulda on the south side. The Sha'arei Chulda is where Chulda HaNaviyah sat in between the 2 gates. Misham Shin Knesi V'tzid. Those were places to enter and leave. Kopinus Min HaMarav. The Kopinus Shar was on the western side. Mishamesh Knesset V'tzid. That was also ways to get in and out of Harabayas. Tida Min HaSafon. Tida was in the southern side. Lo Hayim Mishamesh Kol Medin. It was like a fake gate. Nobody ever went through that way. Shari Mizrahi. But on the eastern side, Alav Shushan Habira Tzura. There was a painting of Shushan Habira on the gates leading in. Shibo Kohen Gadol Hasarif HaSapara. That's where the Kohen Gadol would burn the Para Aduma, Upara Kol Masad Yotzen HaMishcha, and all the types of things they would do as well, other things to the base of Mishra Shushan was there. What was the point of Shar HaShushan? Who gave the Jewish people the permission to build the second base of Mikdash? The Persians. The Persians gave permission. So as a Karas HaTov, they put an image of Shushan, of the Persian capital, on the gates of the Beis HaMikdash, rebuilt it. So what's so special about an image of a city? The Mishnah is a funny thing. The Mishnah is making a funny statement. I drew a picture of a city. So some buildings, some trees. What's going to distinguish that the image that was painted on Shar Shushan was anything unique to the Persian government? How could you determine what was being drawn there? A city could have looked like anything. We're not talking, there's only, how many cities could I draw for you by sketch? Can you tell me you know it? Like the New York City, like the New York City skyline, like Yerushalayim and a windmill, and like the Eiffel Tower. But like outside of that, there's not so many places you're going to identify just by looking at the city. Certainly, you know, 2,500 years ago, and exactly, you know, how unique were the buildings back then. But if you're going to say that it means Shushan Habira is the palace, the complex of Achashverosh and his family, then that's a unique structure. That is a signature that will clearly resonate and say, this is the palace of the Persian government. It's the White House. It's the Capitol building. It's an important structure that when I walk into the Beis HaMikdash, I'll remember who gave us the rights to go and build this. And that's what I think Shushan Habira means there as well. In the second half of the 19th century, there was a French archaeologist who was the single leading expert on Persia. His name was Marcel Auguste Dualfea, and he was a French archaeologist, and he is the one who put Shushan or Susa on the modern map. And every single thing that he discovered lined up exactly with the way that Ibn Ezra describes the Megillah. There's a complex of the Persian government, multi-buildings surrounded by walls, water surrounding it, a bridge. The whole thing was excavated there. You can go read all about this online in different places. But here, I brought for you, this is the New York Times from December 9th, 1888. Persian art from Susa. Finds by the Zelophoids taken to Paris. Palace in Artaxerxes built and freezes from Artaxerxes' palace. Book of Esther confirmed. Every single thing that Ibn Ezra says lined up with the archaeology as well, and it really gives tremendous meaning to what was going on in the Psukim there as well. I'll just end with one more ha'ara about this that I happen to like as well. I heard this from Rabbi David Mandelbaum, who's a very profound, very special Talmud Chacham for Eretz Yisrael. So he told me that sometimes Shushan or Shushan Abira, sometimes Shushan, as we discussed this evening, when we sing after Megillas Esther, we sing the song of Shoshan as Yaakov. So it's a reference to the Jewish people, the Rosa of Yaakov, right? So he says, why do we say Shoshan as Yaakov? Shoshan as Yaakov Tzol v'Samecha. Because Shushan could either be the building, or it could be Shushan where the Jewish people lived. Shoshan as Yaakov, he says, means the Shushan of Yaakov, of the Jewish people. Shoshan as Yaakov Tzol v'Samecha. The city of Shushan, the Shoshan as Yaakov, not the palace of the king. The palace of the king was not rejoicing. But the city of Shushan, where the Jews lived, Shoshan es Yaakov Tzol v'Samecha. The whole city was rejoicing. And that's the poetic way that the Paitzan, the author of the Piyut, references that the city of Shushan was the Jewish city to distinguish it from the capital complex, the seat of government of Shushan Abira. Okay, that's thank you very much. And that's what I have to say.